Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Newspapers are in trouble. Commercial radio and TV are up against it, and NPR has more listeners than ever. Before 1970, it didn't exist. Now Fast Company magazine calls NPR the country's brainiest, brawniest news-gathering giant. Says it may end up saving the news. That is a tall order, and NPR has big challenges of its own. Vivian Schiller is learning all about those. She's NPR's new president and CEO, stepping in at a remarkable moment in the history of American news. This hour, On Point, the future of public radio with NPR's new chief, Vivian Schiller. Joining me now from Washington is Vivian Schiller, CEO and president of National Public Radio. She came to NPR in January from the New York Times, where she headed up nytimes.com, the largest newspaper website on the Internet. Before joining the Times, she was general manager of cable TV's Discovery Times channel and senior VP at CNN Productions. Her first job out of college was as a simultaneous interpreter in the former Soviet Union. It's been quite a journey to NPR. Vivian Schiller, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
I'm not used to interviewing my boss, let alone my boss of bosses. Holy smokes, are we ready for this?
Yeah, you better watch it.
Watch out. Conflict of interest built straight in, but I'll try and bring it on. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of good news and there's tough stuff out there at the same time. We want to look at it all. And we're really excited to get our listeners with an opportunity to speak directly with you, Vivian. But first of all, thanks for joining us.
Oh, no, it's really a pleasure to be here. And you're absolutely right. This is definitely the best of times and the worst of times.
Let's go at some of the good stuff first, or I don't know, interpret it how you like. But I'm looking at here's a remarkable fact. NPR's got all kinds of very popular shows, morning and evening. But just look at Morning Edition for a second, one of the big tent poles. Average daily audience now 7.6 million, 60% larger than the audience for Good Morning America on ABC, a third larger than the audience for the Today Show on NBC. I mean, these were the one-time giants of American mornings. What do you think is pushing NPR's audience to new heights and out in front of commercial news broadcasters who have been so big for so long?
Yeah, it is pretty extraordinary, those statistics. I agree. It was an extraordinary discovery for me when I joined NPR. I've, of course, been a lifelong listener, but it wasn't until I got here and really dove into the numbers that I understood the power and relative to other media, how strong we are. You mentioned that statistic. My other favorite one is one of our weekend shows, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is the audience for that program is twice as much as, get this, twice as much as the audience of The Daily Show and The Colbert Report combined.
Combined. So, take that, funny
I
man.
I know. So we're kind of a sleeping giant. You know, it's funny that it's not so much that I think it speaks less to the fact that network news is declining, although certainly for audience levels it is. There's no doubt about it. But that the NPR experience, it's very interesting. You know, I was a lifelong listener, but because it is the experience of listening to NPR is so intimate for many people. Mm-hmm. It's in their car. They're by themselves. It's sort of a one-on-one experience. There's a sense of you're experiencing this by yourself as opposed to the sense of, wow, you know what? Over 27 million people are also tuning in to NPR every week. So there's a sense, it's sort of a sleeping giant kind of thing. Our numbers have been very large for some time, but this fall, really, we saw record numbers, and I think it just speaks to the fact that when there's so much news happening, especially confusing news, you know, such as the details around the presidential campaign, and particularly around the economy, people tune to a news organization that they trust and also won't just give them the headlines, but will explain what this means to them. I think that is really what NPR almost uniquely offers.
There's intimacy there, though we see again and again, there's also an incredible community there. Here's Fast Company lauding NPR as kind of, you know, will NPR save the news is their headline. And question
That's
mark right
order.
There. Yeah, that is gigantic. But what about, I mean, newspapers, we see them just stumbling and crumbling, and God love them. We hope they survive and do very, very well. But how big a piece of this rapidly changing and in many corners eroding news landscape can NPR pick up the weight in, Vivian Schiller?
Well, you know, my feeling about that is not so much as, oh, good, other news organizations are crumbling. We can step in and take
over. No,
and
I certainly don't mean that. Yeah.
No, I didn't mean to imply that you did. And in fact, you know, one of the hallmarks of democracy, of a strong democracy, our democracy, is the fact that there are many strong news organizations that are holding public institutions and public individuals to task. It's absolutely necessary. So I feel very strongly with it. It's just terrible what's happening in the newspaper industry. But what's happening, you know, on a more hopeful light, it's not that the concept of what newspapers represent is dying. And certainly there are still some very strong, very profitable, I might add, newspapers out there, my former employers, the New York Times among them. There seems to be a misunderstanding that they're losing money, not by a long shot.
But even the Times is scrambling all over the place, selling its building, talking about selling off property, selling the Red Sox right here where I'm looking to, I'm broadcasting from. I mean, it's not like it's sweet sailing these days.
No, not at all. And particularly in Boston, you know, with the Globe, which is not profitable. But I think what we're seeing is the business model change before our very eyes. And there will be a new business model that emerges. I'm completely confident of that. There is too much hunger, too much need, too big an appetite in the American public for the kind of in-depth news that newspapers provide to let that fail, to let that go away. Now, certainly there's a shakeout, and many newspapers have gone under, and many more will. But and there will be certain, you know, changes to the way news is delivered, and the advertising models are changing. But I feel quite confident that the major newspapers that represent some of the best journalism will find their way and remain vibrant. I certainly hope so. Now, with regard to NPR, in the meantime, we certainly need to not only remain vibrant ourselves, but I feel like it is our mission. And remember, we are not a commercial company owned by shareholders. We are here because we have a specific public service and a non-commercial mission to inform the American populace. And it is thrilling to me that we are people are tuning in and we're doing that so effectively on radio. But, you know, we're not going to rest on our laurels of these big numbers. We need to step it up in terms of both our radio programming, our coverage, particularly in the area of investigative journalism, where newspapers are so strong. And we need to also deliver news and information to people in any platform they choose to consume it. We can't just hang on to the way that we've always delivered it as our sole method of communicating the news.
Record numbers ready and waiting for NPR to do that and following it as it does it every day. But what about the tough stuff here, Vivian Schiller? I mean, they're just before you came in, they kind of cleared the decks for you. There were layoffs, 7% of NPR's employees in December. A couple of shows shuttered. NPR listeners know about that as well. There are problems in NPR's own budget. Are they the same kind of problems that commercial broadcasters face?
Some of them are. I mean, look, we're all suffering from a down economy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're all hopeful that, you know, these small hopeful signs that we're seeing in the economy now will continue. But as a result, and I do believe that this is a temporary problem, not a long-term problem, certainly for NPR and for public radio, in the meantime, we are dealing with deficits. And we are seeking now, as you mentioned, we had to shut down two shows in December, and we had to lose those very valuable colleagues. And we're in the process now of reducing our expenses even further. Hopefully it won't result. Certainly the plan is not to cut any more programs, but we're finding ways to save expenses in other ways, because we need to just get through this rough patch.
Not to put too fine a point on it, you and other managers have taken cuts in your compensation yourselves.
Well, that's very true. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, play the world's smallest violin, you know, for my own compensation, because all of the media is suffering the same way. And across the entire industry, people are taking benefit reductions, pay cuts, furlough days. And I felt that it was important for the leadership of NPR to go first in terms of making those personal sacrifices. And we're now in conversation with staff to see if there will be some temporary rollbacks that will help us get through this deficit for the next 18 months. But in the meantime, I don't want to underestimate the impact of that. Everybody is making a sacrifice. There will be almost certainly a few more jobs lost. Hopefully we'll be able to keep those to a minimum. But where my real focus on is the ways that we can transform the business to bring more revenue into NPR and more revenue into public radio as a whole to make sure that we maintain our vibrancy and that we don't just survive this tough period, but we actually, during this tough period, grow and thrive and fill in the gaps that we've been talking about that are happening in the journalism landscape.
We've just got half a minute before break here, Vivian. NPR has, 26, 27 million listeners now in these latest numbers, something like that. What do you think the audience ought to be? Is that big enough for national public radio? Should it be double that? I mean, maybe that sounds crazy, but maybe not in a country of 300 million.
Well, certainly double would be great. The amazing thing about that number is 27.5 million roughly tune into NPR. But what's even more extraordinary than that massive size of that number is the engagement. On average, those 27.5 million people listen to NPR programming 4 hours a week. I honestly can think of no other media enterprise that has that level of engagement other than probably Facebook, which is a very different animal, as you might know. So I think that, you know, certainly we want to grow the audience. We want to grow the amount of listening. And we want to increase the way that people consume public radio and NPR news on other platforms.
We will talk about all that. Vivian Schiller is with us, brand new president and CEO of National Public Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Vivian, it's rare to get to talk to you, and we really want to make you available to our listeners around the country. And let's just begin to go straight to them, if that's all right.
That's great.
Let's go to Augusta, Georgia. And Buddy, hi, Buddy, you're on the air with NPR Chief Vivian Schiller.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Vivian.
Hi.
I want you to know, Tom, you and your program is my absolute favorite.
Great.
I'm in the Georgia, South Carolina area, listener, lifetime of National Public Radio, NPR. Hey, this is what NPR does so wonderfully. First of all, it provides investigation of this information that we need. It gives credibility to it. It doesn't have a lot of bias. I like the fact that there are people that, even the panelists, have a very good balance of pros and cons of different things. And it's so,
We try.
Yeah, you're doing a great job of it. Here's what I don't want NPR to do. Don't give me lots of political consultants, okay? That's not good. Don't give me lots of blogs. Sometimes we have no way of knowing whether they're just opinions, if they're professional people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want you to continue to get more college professors. They seem to have some objectivity in their presentations. And also, just continue to just work toward getting wonderful, good, credible information to the listeners. I thank you so much for being there, and I've been a lifetime listener everywhere I go. Even on vacation, I try to find public radio.
Buddy, stand by for a second. Vivian Schiller, what do you say to Buddy in Augusta?
Well, first I say thank you. That's it's really wonderful to hear, and what's even more gratifying is not just that you're a listener, but that you appreciate us for what we take the most pride in, which is the kind of unbiased, information that we provide. So I really appreciate it. And we will certainly take your message to heart in terms of the kinds of guests we have on the air. I do want to just say something about blogs, because it's an interesting conversation, and you're not the first person to bring it up. There are, you know, a blog is, I'm actually a supporter of blogs, but let me explain what I mean by that before I get, inundated with email and letters saying, what are you talking about? A blog is simply a medium by which news and information can be conveyed in a way that is fast, sometimes informal in terms of the kind of crafting of the writing that you're used to seeing, say, for instance, in print. But in and of itself, it has no inherent values. Now, there are a lot of blogs with people who rant and rave, and there are a lot of blogs from individuals or organizations who have a point of view and some axe to grind. But what's wonderful about a blog in the right hands, in the hands of qualified journalists, and we have some of them ourselves, we have some blogs on our website, is it's a way to make sure that we keep peppering our audience throughout the day with updates and information about the issues that they care about. For instance, Planet Money, which is a very successful and very popular program segment that we have on the air that explains all the complicated facets of the economy. There's a blog, and it's very useful. It's not opinionated. It just gives you lots of hits during the day so that you can feel like you're enriching yourself as you go about your business.
You know, but Buddy raises something so interesting here, because in the past, NPR, this show, not least, has leaned heavily on reporters at news-gathering organizations all over the world. And as they pull back, we have fewer sources to lean on. We've actively talked about, are there bloggers who have the right stature and values and standing that we can indeed go to them? Because you need people who are plugged in. If newspapers are cutting back, NPR can't have every set of eyes and ears in the world, Vivian. We are sticking our toe in the blogosphere waters too.
Absolutely, and there's nothing. Like I said, there's nothing. There are some excellent bloggers out there who I consider some of the finest journalists in this country. We spoke earlier about the fact that the nature of the very model of the way news and information is delivered to Americans is changing, and I think blogs will play a big part of it. Again, in the right hands, there are some wonderful blogs, both on our website at NPR.org, on individual station websites, in many newspapers, and some individual bloggers. People like Josh Marshall are excellent journalists in their own right, and they use the blog as the medium by which that they provide their news and information.
Let's get a call from Lugoff, South Carolina, and Linda. Linda, you're on the air with NPR CEO Vivian Schiller.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is, I'm a firm believer in the Fourth Estate. With commercial news outlets pulling back and transparency of government is vitally important now more than ever, will NPR be picking up that slack? And I'll take my comments off the air.
Yeah, Vivian, it comes right back to it. What about it? How much can NPR pick up?
Yes, that's exactly we're doing quite a bit of it now, but we need to do more. I mean, that's why it's so vitally important that we continue to have the resources to grow. It is part of our mission. It's part of the reason why public radio and why NPR certainly was formed, was to make sure that we provide this service non-commercial, unbeholden to any institution or individual, that we continue to provide that service to this country. And as newspapers go away, we must fill in that void. Now, it takes a lot of feet on the ground, and it takes money to make that happen. We're trying to raise money. We are also trying to partner. We're looking at partnerships with other enterprises. There's no reason why we have to do it alone.
Don't have to do it alone. Let's get another right here from George in Sherdan, Iowa. George, you're on the air with Vivian Schiller.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, well, I'm addicted to NPR. I guess I would die without NPR.
Please don't.
Yeah. We'll keep it on the air for that reason.
Yeah, we'll stay there.
I feel like there's newspaper coverage generally is junk because there's a basic conflict of interest most of the time. The newspaper reporters don't report all of the facts, and they usually make the same assumptions about things going on in the world that the military-industrial complex and Wall Street make, which are not helpful for getting us out of these terrible situations this country's in right now. We here in Iowa, we're lucky to hear the BBC, and I tend to think that they don't have such newspaper reporters on their radio programs, which I think is a kind of a fault of NPR once in a while. And also, I question the wisdom of having Michelle Norris and Juan Williams appear on NBC and the Fox News, because I think it throws their veracity into question. And I'm wondering sometimes whether they're really saying what they really feel, or whether they're saying it because they want to keep their cushy jobs on these commercial TV programs.
You're talking about All Things Considered co-host Michelle Norris appears on Meet the Press sometimes, I guess,
yes.
George, and Juan Williams?
Yeah. Juan Williams appears on Fox News.
Right, George, let us pick that up. Vivian, what about that? These are hosts, or a big analyst in Juan Williams' case appearing on opinion shows. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, we certainly have our reporters out speaking to other media all the time. Just this past Sunday on Meet the Press, as you said, Michelle Norris and several of our Adam Davidson and Adam Bloomberg from our Planet Money segment that we refer to were there talking about their particular insight. I think it's important, you know, we spoke earlier about, you know, the intimate experience listeners have with NPR. We want to make sure that we continue to offer that to more people. And the way to do that is to reach them through other forms of media. So certainly I'm supportive of the strategy of having our reporters go on the air now.
But Michelle's a host. Is there an issue with that? I mean, would Brian Williams, maybe would, but sit on a panel offering opinions about the affairs of the day?
No. Now, I didn't say it was okay to offer opinions. Certainly, it is perfectly fine for Michelle Norris to be as a host. We encourage it. We support it. We try to make it happen. What they need to understand, and what certainly they do understand, is that wherever they go, on whatever program they are journalists first, and they are NPR journalists and thereby are responsible to conduct themselves in the same manner that they would if it were something for our air, which is we don't talk about opinions. We talk about insights into the news, which is very different than opinions. Now, Juan Williams is a slightly different situation. He is a contributor. He is not a reporter. He has expressed opinions on Fox News programs, but he's a contributor of ours. He's not an anchor reporter for NPR. And, you know, that's the nature of our relationship with him. But everybody else, they very much must conduct themselves and do conduct themselves, I can say with great pride, as journalists wherever they go.
I want to talk with you about platforms. Here's a comment from Facebook, On Point Radio at Facebook, from Kim Norman Mercer. And she says she thinks NPR's popularity is growing in part because the audio format is so flexible. People can bring the programs via iPod, MP3 players, to the gym, the grocery store, work, while making dinner, commuting. And that is a big thing. She can listen to NPR while doing other things. You come out of an online background with nytimes.com. Talk about platforms going forward and how you see that. Is the live radio experience, the broadcast radio experience, what, the mothership forever? Is it melding into the internet and online delivery? What's the future look like?
Right. Well, I think that Kim has posed a really interesting question and an area for discussion. First of all, she's absolutely right. Audio is an extraordinarily nimble form of media. I think of all the so-called, you know, you've maybe heard the expression legacy media. When people talk about legacy media, they're talking about the media that's been around for a while, which is print, radio, and television. I would say of all those three, that as we know it today, you know, radio or audio is probably has the most staying power because, as Kim correctly points out, there are so many different ways that you can experience it while you're doing other things. You can certainly listen to a live broadcast. You can listen to a live stream. You can listen to a downloaded program onto your iPod and there are many other different ways to consume audio down the road. And our goal is to always what we are is not a radio company or a radio organization. We are a news and information organization whose primary mode of delivering that news and information is audio, certainly is radio, as attested to by our large audience numbers. So we will continue to make sure that we are front and center and the leaders in audio in whatever platform it develops, but not exclusively, not to the exclusion of other forms of content, not to the exclusion of the other ways that news and information can be delivered on the web, on mobile platforms, on iPhones, in text, in sometimes video, in interactive graphics, in blogs, in audio snippets embedded within text. That's what's so wonderful about new forms of media. They're very nimble, and each one of them has a unique attribute that gets at a way to be able to convey the essence of a story. And we want at our disposal all the different ways to be able to convey news and information and provide, tell a story and get to the essence of the story in all manner of platform. It's very much part of our mission and something that I'm focused on very intently.
You know, that comes to a central issue for NPR. When you go online, you kind of reach over the top or have been perceived this way of your local member stations who have, you know, NPR was built on 800-900 member stations all around the country. How do you resolve that? How do you make NPR vital online and not cut out the local stations who have been your carrier network from the get-go?
Right. Well, this is a subject that's been of much discussion lately. First of all, let me just say something about our unique national local system. NPR, the way that people, when we talk about NPR programming listened to by 27.5 million people for 4 hours a week, we are not talking, people don't tune into NPR. They tune into their local station. It's funny because wherever I go, and, you know, if I'm at my children's school or what have you, and I say I work at NPR, the most common response is, ah, I love that station. Mm. And of course, the first few times, silly me, I took the time to explain, well, we're not really a station exactly. And after a while, I just gave up and said thank you. But I understand, and everybody here understands, that there is no NPR experience. The NPR experience on the radio is the local station experience. Now, let's talk about how that translates to online, because the subject that you're referring to, which, you know, we know it internally as the debate about bypass, is NPR.org bypassing local stations and communicating directly with the listeners and cutting out the stations? Mm. That is not the objective whatsoever. First of all, NPR provides a way through NPR.org to get to the streams of the local stations, get to local station content. And what we're beginning to just remember, we're in the first couple of innings of the web here. And National Public Radio is probably at the top of the first inning, quite honestly. The long-term goal is that NPR, just in the same way as we are with radio, becomes the enabler of a nationwide network small and not owned and controlled by NPR. We don't own or control anything. But that is enabled by NPR so that in every community, every listener in every community has a robust online experience through their local station where they can get hyperlocal and local news from their station, as well as national, international coverage from NPR. And we are in a position to provide software services to those stations, to help them with blanket deals, to aggregate the audience so that we know what the total number of users to public radio programming online is.
How do you do that? How do you reach out with all that without reaching over?
Right. Well, the ultimate goal is that NPR.org becomes really a network that is owned and controlled locally by the stations, that we are enabler and provider of that content. We're just in the beginning of this process. In fact, we're launching a pilot program with about a half a dozen stations that's going to be kicking off actually this week, whereby we're going to experiment with what it looks like on the local level to have a locally branded website that is focuses, and with that information from those local websites being shared across the system. That is our goal, is to make sure that in the same way that people listen to the great programming through their local station, that they get great NPR quality and local quality public radio content on their websites.
Are your local managers buying this, or are they watching? Are they worried that one way or another you're going to, you know, become the national poobah and they're cut out?
Well, you know, actions speak louder than words, mm-hmm. right? I've tried to explain this, mm-hmm. and we've got a list of stations who were signed up for this pilot that among the largest in the country, including WBUR, where this show is originating. Mm-hmm. And so there's a great deal of embrace. I mean, what NPR has been able to do traditionally is to provide the resources and to provide, you know, some system leadership to help all of the stations. I mean, by providing, you know, some of the fine programs that we do provide, we're lifting all boats. And it's the same thing for online media. Are there some stations who are suspicious that think that there's some master plan for NPR to take over the world? Surely there are. But all I can tell you is, boy, I'd love to see that master plan, because I'm not aware of it, but I'd love to read it.
Vivian Schiller, new president and CEO of NPR National Public Radio. Vivian, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Call from Harwich, Massachusetts, and Meg. Hi, Meg. You're on the air with the head of NPR, Vivian Schiller. Meg, are you there?
Hi.
Hi, Meg. You're on.
Okay. What I really like to say is how much I enjoy NPR. I love that it's so intellectually stimulating. It's what I think of as the thinking man and woman's radio. It tells the news as well as the story behind the news, and that's what I really enjoy. The one thing that I'm kind of disappointed about is it takes money from as underwriters, and it seems like that's not important. Like you have Walmart, you take money from Walmart, and every time you have an underwriter that's sort of suspect in the news, it sort of gives the idea that it's supporting Walmart. And it, I just don't understand why you take their money. But it's money for NPR, and I guess it gets the word out. Also, as the phone company used to say, reach out and touch someone, and NPR definitely does that. It's a great program. I have it on the car all the time, and all the programs I enjoy.
Meg, that's great.
All, and thanks again.
Thank you very much, Meg. Vivian Schiller, what about the underwriters? I mean, they've been there a long time now with NPR. This is an old conversation, and nevertheless, listeners listen afresh every day, and sometimes they may hear a corporate underwriter and those little squibs that come in, and they may think, well, what about influence here?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It has been an issue for a long time. But first, let me just clear, if there's a underwriting message from Walmart, that's not NPR advocating Walmart. It's Walmart advocating NPR. So I just want to make that distinction. Mm. You know, we don't I don't feel and we don't feel that it's for us to say that. I mean, certainly there are inappropriate underwriters and sponsors whose messages are advocacy based, who we do not feel are appropriate to be on our air, and we will not take their money, and we will not mention their, you know, any underwriting message on our air. But a commercial company like a Walmart, look, you know, it's not for us to say that they should not be underwriting NPR. They're not presenting an advocacy position. You know, an underwriting message is an announcement of a support of a donation that is made by a corporation. And unless that corporation, unless their underwriting message is inappropriate and represents a point of view, then I see no problem with doing it. You know, there's nobody on earth that isn't going to have a problem with some organization that underwrites us. But, you know, that's not for us to say. And it's not just a matter of, oh, well, it's money to us and therefore we'll take it. It's a fair and open policy. And you know, we don't pass judgment on corporations about whether or not they should be marketing themselves.
Vivian, here's a comment question from Twitter at On Point Radio from Graham. He says, Graham Webster, what's the revenue model for NPR.org if local stations and syndication fees don't roll in? What about congressional money, Congress's money? Where does that federal support fill in now? And what if things get tough? Can you go to that well or not?
Right. Well, things are tough,
yes,
right
indeed.
Now. I mean, this is not a theoretical conversation at all.
You've got a shortfall this year of how many million anticipated?
Yeah, we have a shortfall, a remaining shortfall in fiscal year 09, which takes us to the end of September, of about $8 million. And as I mentioned earlier, we're looking to close that through benefit reductions and some other measures that will not be felt by the listener. And we have another deficit to cover for next year that we hope to cover in a similar manner. In terms of our let me just back up and say where the money comes from that support NPR. About a little over 40% of it comes from stations. Stations pay us license fees and dues for the programs that they air, for the programs of ours that they air. Mm. Another 40%, 30-some-odd to 40% comes from underwriting and sponsorship, which we just spoke about on air and online. We also get gifts from foundations. You hear us talk about the Ford Foundation or the Knight Foundation and others, and from philanthropists who donate money to us. We have investment income, which, of course, is down this year, and some other bits and pieces. Less than 1% of NPR's funding comes from federal grants to the CPB through CPB.
Say that again.
Less than 1% of NPR's revenue comes through from the government, so to speak, through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is a non-governmental agency. Now, the stations do get more money than that from NPR. It's more than 1%. And we are in the process right now of seeking supplemental funding for the stations, not for NPR, both public television and public radio stations. It remains to be seen whether that will come to pass. But in the meantime, we're looking at other ways that we can bring more revenue into the system, to the stations and to NPR alike.
Let's get a call from Terry in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Terry. You're on the air with Vivian Schiller.
Hello. I hope I've been listening to NPR for years, and I recommend people I know to listen to it. And I just hope you don't use demographics too much, you know, like TV networks do. Like, started using it in the early 70s, where they were only interested in, like, appealing
18-year-olds?
18-to-30-year-old females.
Yeah.
Right. Got it. What about it, Vivian? What about the demographics of NPR listenership? And do you tailor NPR specifically to, I don't know, get 18-year-old females or anybody else?
No. I mean, our programming, look, all news services, whether it's a CNN or a Fox News, which has an average age of about 60 years old, you know, newspapers, which have a slightly younger demographic in the 40s, our average age is about 49. News organizations tend to skew older. That's been the case since the beginning of time. They're not really getting older. People age into news and information services, and that's fine. And so we don't, you know, if what you're suggesting is that we might dumb down, not that young people are dumb, that we might dumb down our service to reach a broader audience, absolutely not. That would be, you know, that would go fly in the face of everything that we stand for and represent. We do like to think of ourselves as very accessible, of course. You know, we're not highbrow. You know, something, again, like Planet Money is quite the opposite of that. It's taking complex issues and making sure that people can understand them without speaking to them with any kind of condescension. But you do raise an important issue that I think about, and we all think about a lot, which is how to reach the younger generation. I don't believe that the way to reach a younger generation is for a bunch of old people like myself to sit in a room and go, oh, what are the young people like, and put on a radio show, because it just won't ring true. It's inauthentic, and it's just proven time and time again that doesn't work. The best thing that we can do is maintain our high standards, maintain our intelligent delivery, but deliver it in other platforms. Because the fact is, the next generation, they do are listening to radio, and I think they will continue to listen to radio, but they might be listening to it in a download, on a podcast, on a stream. They might be looking at a website. They're going to be on their iPhone. So we need to make sure that we reach people wherever they're using media. It is not for us to tell people, this is how you have to get your news and information. We need to listen to them, and we need to serve them where they are. And so that's our approach for reaching a younger generation.
Let me ask you, do you think in the newspaper world, which I came out of and know well years ago, you know, the Internet first looked like a little speck on the horizon, and then all the little pieces of it came up and gobbled up the business of newspaper companies, and now is putting some of them out of business and a lot of them in trouble. Do you see a threat to NPR like that from Internet audio, Internet broadcasting, you know, 1,000 people in their basements putting up little audio files that, I don't know, 15 years from now, nibble into NPR's franchise and take it away?
Well, absolutely. If we don't, if history is any judge, and common sense is any judge, if we don't continue to adapt, we will be left behind. Now, I want to be clear, that doesn't mean that we're moving away from radio. Radio is robust and growing and will be for, certainly for the rest of my lifetime and my children's lifetime, but that doesn't mean, but absolutely we must, there's one message I want to make sure I get through, is that we must continue to be able to reach people however they're consuming media. And I think, you know, many of the newspapers, look, did the right thing. You know, the New York Times, which I know best, you know, launched their website back in 1996 at the very beginning of people starting to use the internet in a meaningful way, and they put all their content out there, and they made it free, and that's why it's one of the most important and biggest news and information sites on the web today. You've got to make content available to people. You have to continue to adapt. You know, there's a Clayton Christensen popularized the notion of disruptive technologies, which is the automobile coming and putting the buggy whip manufacturers out of business. Well, we've got to be our own disruptors. If we are not our own disruptors, we will most certainly be overtaken.
Disruptors unite. Robert in North Hero, Vermont. You're on the air, Robert. Hi.
Hi, guys. Hey, I just, first of all, I'm a long, long, long time listener at NPR. I've actually have advertised through the local member stations in Vermont for 15 years. It's a terrific value for us. Very productive advertising. Big, strong signal goes up into Canada as well, and free of charge. But I'd like to talk just for a second about bias. You mentioned earlier, we were talking about the newspapers falling by the wayside. There's two that I know very well. I'm a native of Seattle, and for years read the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, or the PI, and also the Boston Globe. Both of these papers are one has died, one is very near death, and they are just shamelessly.
We hope not in the Globe's case, but who knows?
Well, but I just find them unreadable. I should say that I'm a very small R Republican who voted for Obama. I don't have a hard edge right side. But I just have found those papers literally unreadable in the morning.
Unreadable in what terms, Robert? In political terms?
Unreadable in the sense that their filters that they put, they ran all their stories through their very left filters, and it just made, to me, I wasn't getting real news. I was just getting, you know, a very pitched version of the news.
So what's your question or comment for Vivian, sir?
Well, the question I want to say, or the comment that I want to make is that I think there's always been a big discussion about NPR and its point of view. I think we could probably agree that it's either center-left or left-center. It's not a wildly liberal network, but it's certainly not a conservative one. And I just find sometimes, you know, I just cringe at comments. Trying to remember the name of your senior news analyst, a wonderful guy, but by no means, you know, taking a middle view. And you
my
don't
dear Jack
have
Beattie.
A counter. Mm. Pardon me?
My dear Jack Beattie, though we work all the time to book guests across a spectrum of political view, and I hope you hear that effort.
I think you do, but I think there is a natural left, slightly left bias within NPR. And let me just say this, you know, you raising money is a really big part of your life, and probably not the part you look forward to every quarter.
Has to be
but,
done.
I'm somebody that probably could leave some money behind in a will one day long from now when I pass on, but I wouldn't do it to NPR because I just don't feel if you could deliver that bowling ball right down the middle of the lane, I think your audience will grow even larger.
Robert, let's take it to Vivian Schiller. Robert.
Robert, I'm sorry you feel that way. It'll come as no shock to you that I disagree. I do not consider ourselves I certainly don't consider, you're right, that I do not consider that NPR is a conservative network, but neither do I consider it a liberal set of programs either. But you don't have to take my word for it. Take the word of our listeners. What is astounding to me, is so telling to me is that in survey after survey of our audience, with a very large sample size, we have asked members of our audience to self-declare, do you consider yourself left or slightly left of center? We give them four choices. Do you consider yourself left, slightly left of center, right, or slightly right of center? And it's right down the middle. Our listeners tell us that they represent all manner of the spectrum. I think certainly that doesn't stop people from attacking us from the left and the right, I might add, on stories all the time. That's just the nature of being in the news business. And, you know, we tell really compelling stories and people get excited about it. And I think that's wonderful. And it's one of the great things, that kind of dialogue. But consistently, year after year, our audience is equally split. And I think if truly our listeners overall felt that we were a liberal network, they wouldn't be tuning in.
Robert, keep listening and keep giving us your feedback. We appreciate it. Let's get a call here from Kevin in Providence, Rhode Island. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're great. What do you know?
I have more of a comment. I guess it doesn't really add on to the last person, but it kind of goes along with it. I'm 18 years old. I'm a college student. I listen for about probably 2 hours a day for my commute to and from school.
Great.
And I'm pretty far leftist. I listen to most of my media comes a lot from the internet, Democracy Now, and Z Communications and things like that, but I find myself in the car listening to you guys just because I do find it more well-rounded. And, you know, coming from the far left, a lot of times you listen to supposedly rounded news reports, CNN and things like that, and you start to see an ideal of personification of the news of, this is either evil or good. One person is either on our side or not on our side. And I don't seem to get that from NPR, and I truly enjoy it. I mean, like I said, I enjoy my leftist media a lot too, but when I just want to get the stories and probably research them more myself, I end up listening to you guys.
Kevin, our time is short, but we appreciate your observation, and you make the point that it's a lot of this is in the ear of the beholder, and Vivian, you must be very aware of that as you hear from people right across the spectrum all the time.
Absolutely.
Here's a question from the website. It says, given the drying up of advertising funds, do you think that news gathering operations may become a kind of publicly sponsored utility, i.e., the NPR model may be broadened? I mean, are others going to come in and try and do the same thing? Is the New York Times going to look for a philanthropic, basis for its news gathering one day? Does NPR have a lock on what NPR on its model?
Yeah, well, I was just about to say we certainly don't have a lock on any model, nor are we trying to be. Look, a lot of news organizations are trying are thinking about different ways that they will continue to support themselves, and they have to do it. And I applaud them with that effort. It's going to be a lot of experimentation that goes on before, you know, during this shakeout that we're in the midst of, before a new solid model emerges, and that's fine. And you know, I've been asked by several people, well, how do you feel about newspapers doing pledge drives and that kind of thing? And certainly, like I said, we do not have a lock. It is certainly not for me, and I don't believe it's for anyone in public radio to tell them that they should not do that. You know, we don't own that process. My only concern about that is transparency to the audience, because NPR listeners, public radio listeners, wherever you are, WBUR, WAMU, wherever you are, when you listen, you know what you're giving to. You know that this is a not-for-profit. You know that your money is going directly into the operations and the funding of the news and information that you listen to on the radio. It's not going into the hands of shareholders or to dividend payouts to, you know, based on profitability. So,
it's the
which
news.
Isn't to say, yes, which isn't to say that commercial companies should not do that. I just would hope that they make sure they understand that they are not a charitable organization.
Vivian Schiller, President and CEO of National Public Radio. It's been great speaking with you. I hope you'll come back. Good luck, and hope we talk with you down the road, Vivian.
Oh, thanks. I really enjoyed it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.